You are listening to Punk News Podcast 344, starting very late, very late. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is episode 344. We've got a late start because I haven't updated my Skype since 1989, so it wasn't working. So the boys had to wait patiently while I, you know, got out the cardboard boxes, the jumper cables, the lube, you know, and just had to do a whole complete overhaul of my Skype system, take it out for a test drive. But I got a brand new Skype. It's working now, out of the box. It's brand spanking new. Adam White, are my persistent technical problems burdensome, or does that make me affable and lovable in my lovable ineptitude when it comes to high tech electronics?
No, you have lovable ineptitude if you have a real world mechanical thing that you can't quite figure out. So let's say you really don't know how to fix something, and you've got a, I don't know, the door to your shed won't close right, and the only way that you could figure out to put it together was to get a bunch of like rope and duct tape and build some complicated Rube Goldberg machine to keep the door on straight. That's kind of lovably inept. If you just can't update Skype, that's in the digital realm.
I think I'm so stupid. I don't even know how to open a door. I think that's what Adam White just said. Adam White, you said you were tired, so we got to go quickly tonight. Why are you tired?
Oh God, no! I real world stuff. It's work. We're in like a super crunch time at work, so we're trying to get a bunch of software written before we need to have the software written for. And I'm pulling, you know, I'm gonna be pulling late nights and weekends for like a month, and I'm like 3 days into doing it, and I am exhausted. So I don't know how I'm gonna last. And you know, on top of that, my kid likes to walk into my room at 4 a.m. and be like, "Hey, you're trying to sleep," and then I'm fucked. So I'm sitting here, John. I'm all tired. I'm all surly. I was tired and surly at like 1 p.m. So the fact that it's like 10 p.m. right now isn't helping me very much. And what do I get in my tired, surly face is our guest host tonight, Mr. Greg Simpson. Hi. Out of wherever the fuck, the Midwest. Being horribly chipper. Just jokes and jokes and laugh-em-ups and yee-haw and all this stuff. And I'm just like, every jokey thing that comes out of your mouth, I'm like, I fucking hate you, Greg. I'm going to kill you somehow.
You hate everything that comes out of my mouth. That's just the jokey things. Admit it, Adam. Admit it. Oh. You just keep me around because I'm a pretty face.
No. I think you have the lovely voice of an angel, but Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ superstar.
So, yeah. This is my general disposition right now. It's like everyone is being far too happy.
Well, far be it from me to cast light upon Adam White's rudimentary peni disposition of life. But listen, man, it's been a rough week or so, busy week, and the pain is just going to increase for the rest of this podcast. But we'll make this like my love life as quick and as painless as possible. That's podcast editor Greg Simpson over there. Greg Simpson, you said that you're about to sit in front of a $1 million piece of equipment. What's that like? What's that feeling like?
Well, I mean, being at Sonic Iguana is already a very surreal experience, but how can I tell you what it's going to be like if I haven't said any yet? Huh?
Okay, let's reach into the mailbag.
Good chat.
You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Steve. Steve says, I heard John sing Danzig on the opening for the podcast. John, please never sing again. And that's from Steve. This is from Neil. Liverpool Neil likes to write in and tell us how much he's angry at us. Here's what Neil has to say. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. Soaking in the recent podcast, and I have a couple of comments. First, John lost his mind with the Anvil dumpster fire. The Anvil song might have been the worst song ever recorded in the history of music. They want to be pirates, Nice. I used to write lyrics like that when I was 9. Seriously, it seriously reminded me of why I love punk and rock in the first place and never liked metal. Number 2, Ricky's voice sounds suspiciously like Butthead's from Beavis and Butthead. Number 3, John, you said something bizarre in the latest podcast about Record Store Day. When Ricky said he was interested in that Ramones single box set, you muttered something about it not being a big deal and it is cheaper to buy the OGs. Are you high? Blitzkrieg Bop alone goes for over $100. Most of the other ones in the box set go for about $50 each. So to buy these 10 singles OGs would cost $500, $600 if you could find them. So $80 for the Record Store Day box set is a great deal. And I looked into Neil's admonishment of my statement, and he was right. I thought you could get a copy of Blitzkrieg Bop for like 10 bucks. It is like $100, $200 single. So he's right. So in that respect, the $80 Record Store Day 10 single box set is a steal, if you will. Or you could just buy everything all at once for $5 on CD. So I still advise against getting the Ramones CD 7-inch box set. But it is cheaper than buying the originals. Neil says, Adam, with your love of all things Canadian, how about some Canadian psychobilly sometime, like The Creep Show or The Brains? Or how about some punk and roll from the Black Halos from Vancouver?
I love the Black Halos, man. When I was a kid, before I listened to a whole lot of music or anything, I remember hearing, oh God, what is the name of the song? But like, Someday I'll Fall. What is the name of that single? They had a huge single, Black Halos, in the 90s. Was it the 90s? Come on, someone.
Don't know.
John, you know about the Black Halos. Black Halos, Someday, Some Things Will Fall, Some Things Never Fall. There you go. Some Things Never Fall. It was from 2001. I was definitely listening to music at that time, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyways, though, that song ruled. And the Black Halos have done a lot of cool stuff since. I've never found a whole ton of Canadian psychobilly that I've been really into. I mean, I'm aware of the bands that he talked about. There was definitely a local band that might have been more of like a rockabilly act that was around, but they played a lot of bars when I was a young teenager, and you could go to like a pizza parlor or something like that, so I have a lot of affinity for that. I gotta go dig some out, but man, yeah, Black Halos, that's I forgot all well, about the, them
that well, there one you have single it.
At the very least
Liverpool
is really
Neil,
cool
throwing out some Canadian psychobilly. I think Liverpool Neil is mad that I called the guy from Necromantics Kim Necromantics. I said he had a Kid and Play haircut. I think Neil's never forgiven me for that. Meanwhile, even Kid and Play don't have the Kid and Play haircuts anymore, which I'm sad about. Have you guys ever seen Kid and Play House Party Number 1? It's actually surprisingly entertaining. Like, it's not like a good film, but it's a fun film. And it's good, clean fun. I recommend House Party. Anyway, Neil continues. What do you guys have against Anti-Flag? I've been listening to the podcast for years now, and I don't think I've ever heard you talk about them. Did they upset you at all somehow?
Ooh, this is, that's an interesting one from my perspective. The dick thing to say here is that my favorite Anti-Flag song is their cover of Buzzcocks Ever Fallen in Love.
That is a dick thing.
But I have no problem with Anti-Flag on like a number of levels. I don't, they all seem like perfectly cool people. I'm into the kind of music that they play. But there is, for some reason, they've never been a band that has, they've never captivated me to the point where I've decided that I need to go listen to them. And it's been a repeated theme in my life where I'm, there are Anti-Flag songs among the things that I am engaging with, and I just don't bother with them. There's been times where I remember being at shows years ago when I had to like make the choice where I went and I saw whoever was opening, and then it was like, oh, do you want to stick around and watch Anti-Flag? And I'm like, no, let's go get a drink. And that's happened a few times, so I don't know exactly where in my head I have that disconnect. I may have some deep-seated psychological Anti-Flag blindness that I latched onto at a young age, and I have forever used it to avoid talking about them. I don't know why. I'd want to say something like, oh, they're kind of cliche with what they do, but no, I listen to all kinds of like cliche political shit, so I can't hold that against them. I don't know. I really don't know. That's my answer. I have no idea.
Greg, any anti-flag opinions? Are you pro-anti-flag or anti-anti-flag?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've never had any strong opinions, but I'll say the production of the record sounds great, right?
Well, there you have it. Speaking of great...
No one's getting that. Okay.
Oh, why? Did your boss, like, produce them or something?
A couple of them, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Of course, Greg is a producer. Greg, are you a producer, an engineer? What's your title?
Well, it depends. If Mass is the producer, then he'll hire me as an engineer, you know, under him. But I've also started producing my own stuff just this year.
So Greg's a producer and an engineer over at Sonic Iguana Studios, and you should all get him to produce all your cool records. Greg, Sonic Iguana, is that an Iggy Pop reference?
I don't think so.
Greg, you really light the podcast on fire this evening, Greg.
I'm just waiting for, I don't know, sorry, my pets are both bugging me. My cat, I'm having to distract with a piece of yarn, seriously, and now my dog is tapping around trying to go eat the cat food or the cat shit or something, so I'm a little distracted at the current moment. So I apologize.
Well, they have it. Greg does cool stuff at Sonic Iguana. He actually produces some pretty well-known bands in the punk rock scene or engineers, so that's actually really cool.
But John, what's your anti-flag?
You want my honest anti-flag read? Not a fan. I mean, I don't hate them. I just kind of find them cliche and boring. Like, I don't want to listen to a band that sounds like The Clash or sounds like The Clash and Crass a little bit. I want to listen to Crass or The Clash. You know, I did interview the anti-flag guy once and had an extremely deep interview with him about his sister being murdered. It was one of the best. So now I feel bad about saying I don't like his band. But, well, what do you want me to say? I think they do walk like they talk, more or less, which is pretty tough to do in music, really. It just, I listen to it, and there doesn't seem to be anything special to it. It seems to be competent modern punk rock, and at this point, I want something beyond that. I want something interesting and unique. I realize it's a dick answer, but I'm not going to lie. I wish them well. I'm just not a fan. Anyway, Neil says, I haven't listened to the Black Flag special yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Cheerio, Toodle, and Pip. From Liverpool, Neil. As always, you can reach us at podcast at punknews.org. And continuing our week of pain and our week of punishment and our week of annoyance, I was recently annoyed by one of my favorite bands. I interviewed Effed Up, Mike Halichuk of Effed Up, guitar player, and I guess you could say mastermind behind Effed Up. And I thought I got a really good interview out of him. I got him to talk about some things that he's never talked about before. The main thing being, I guess, the central thesis of Effed Up that I've been working on for a while, that Mike Halichuk has trouble relating to most people, and he doesn't enjoy relating or talking to people, and that's why he's able to be so introspective and come up with such unique, interesting, and daring music. No one ever really asks him about that. They always ask him about more meta questions about Effed Up, like, where do you see Effed Up now? You know, where was Effed Up 10 years ago? Like, we've already asked it. So I want to get into who this Mike Halichuk guy is, because he's extremely interesting and extremely unique. And he didn't give verbose answers, but I think he gave incredibly insightful answers and unique answers. And I think I got some really good new information out of him. But man, did they bum me out. But I'm not sure if I'm right to be bummed out or not. And Greg and Adam, you can tell me if I'm right to be bummed out or not. So I think I got a pretty good interview out of him. And then initially, for like the first 5 minutes of the interview was posted, I spelled his name wrong. I put CK at the end instead of K because he's got the hardest name in the world to spell. And so then on Twitter, instead of retweeting the interview or just posting the interview or ignoring the interview, they put in big letters, hire a proofreader, and then they link to the interview. And that really, really bummed me out, because the reason I made that error to begin with, because I was up till 2 a.m. the night before finishing typing up the interview to make sure that it would run in a time period beneficial to the band. And so that really, really, it's like, you know, I've been a fan for 10 years. I spent my time research an interview question. So I know you're a difficult interview, and I appreciate that you're a difficult interview because you're a unique person. So I came at questions that are unique, but not too invasive and not insulting. And we got a good interview out of it. And I stayed up till 2 a.m. Meanwhile, wake up at 7 a.m. the next morning to finish this interview for you. So it would come out around when the record came out, and I get kicked in the face. Now, the question is, were they trying to kick me in the face, or do they feel there's such a positive relation between Punk News and Effed Up that they can josh us and they're not really trying to hurt us? They're like, oh, those lovable schmucks. Or was it a diss? If it was a diss, then I'm really pissed off. If it was a lovable josh, then actually I'm a little bit complimented that they would feel familiar enough to do that kind of a thing. And I don't know. And I want to get in, like most people would say, well, I'll just assume it's a lovable Josh, but I've never had that ability. I've always really want the line clearly demarcated in the sand, so I know where to stand. So it really bummed me out.
It seemed kind of like a diss to me. I don't know. It seemed a little harsh. It's like point taken, but yikes.
I don't know. If they really didn't appreciate the piece that you had put together, they wouldn't link to it at all.
That's true.
If they had a serious problem with it, you know, if they were questioning your professionalism or whatever like that, you figure someone would say something more to you than one tweet.
But maybe not in the era of the internet. You know what I mean? Like, instead of resolving problems like people would have 15 years ago, they just do something snarky on the internet and move on because they're scared of the conflict itself. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but at the same point, it's the internet. They're responding quickly on the internet. We're, you know, putting stuff up quickly on the internet. It's all people doing shit quick on the internet. They're not going to like put on their top hat and meet you.
Well, they should. I don't know where I want to stand on this.
You just own it. Oops, well, I fucked up the name. That's kind of a dumb fuck up.
Dissing me, if that was a diss, is super lame. You know what I mean? I'm willing to accept that I messed up. And if it was a lovable Josh, that's fine. But if it was a diss, that's a problem. What makes it even more difficult is the new record is really, really good. Like, the Year of the Snake is one of the best Zodiacs. Adam, have you heard it yet?
I'm waiting for mine to show up in the mail. It hasn't shown up yet.
Sounds real good.
I would say this to you. I would say that, one, you're thinking about it way more than whoever posted that tweet thought about it.
True.
And two, we've talked repeatedly on this show about how we're not looking for, you know, band people to be nice or band people to be our buddies or our friends. We don't want whiskey and friendship, John. We want danger and weirdos and craziness.
That's fine, so, as long as they're not personally attacking me. And if they're personally attacking me, that's fine. I'll still say the record is good, but I have to have some self-respect.
Well, I mean, it was a link. It was a link to the article. It wasn't like at John Gentile is a dick.
At Punk News, or was it just in general?
They just shared the Punk News article.
Right. So it didn't even say at Punk News or at John.
If this was D&D, my snark resistance is -7 right now. I feel like the guy that runs MorrisseySolo.com, there's two main Morrissey websites. There's TrueToYou.net, which is the approved Morrissey website, which Morrissey releases his press releases to, and then there's MorrisseySolo.com. And the weird thing about MorrisseySolo.com is the guy that runs it is a huge, probably the biggest Morrissey fan in the world, but he's creepy in that he also like hates Morrissey and writes these long essays on his website about how much he hates Morrissey. And Morrissey hates him so much that he's banned from every Morrissey concert there is. So the guy tries to sneak into Morrissey concerts under different names, but he gets like caught. And so it's like
what is this happening?
No, I'm getting to it. And the question is, if your favorite artist hates you so much, how can you still like spend any time on that artist? Why don't you have any self-respect and just say, well, listen, I'm not going to devote my time and energy to somebody that hates me. You know what I mean? And so I don't want to devote my time to
anything.
Well, maybe it is with that guy. Maybe it is. But see, as we've discussed in the podcast before, I am not an S&M kind of guy. And so if I'm getting dissed, then I'm just going to walk away. You know what I mean? But I'd like to get clarification so I can understand if it's a diss or if it's a friendly Josh. I don't know.
John, at worst, it was a stern look from the other side.
Don't give me
a
stern look.
They didn't burn your mom's house down.
I know, but listen, man, don't
give
me a stern look if I'm up till 2 a.m. trying to get this up in time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but no one knows about your personal, the background or the stuff that you had to do about it. They just looked at it and went, hey, my name's spelt wrong. People's names, John. This is a Dale Carnegie quote for you. Dale Carnegie quote for you, John. A person's name is the sweetest word they've ever heard. I don't know if that's the actual quote, but
I like the sound of that.
John, I mean, it sounds nice. I mean, Dale Carnegie's great. And unless you realize that like Charles Manson was a big Dale Carnegie guy. because it helped him with his goals, such as what they were. I hate to say that the Dale Carnegie people don't like to talk about that. Anyways, John, I love you, but I think you're worrying too much about this.
Maybe.
I mean, you could. I just don't want you to build like an effigy or anything.
Build an effigy. I'm not building an effigy, but I'm building an intense hatred.
Or like one of those evidence boards from a TV show where you have like pictures of fucked up all over your wall and like red thread
that is what I'm doing. That is, like, don't well, do listen, that. Let's play another hard
number it is.
Let's play another hardcore band to clear the air. If you guys have ever been to 924 Gilman, which was recently nominated as a place of historical significance by the Berkeley City Council, which is cool. If you've ever been to 924 Gilman, they have a box of like demos and stuff. And if you're there, you should always go through it. I've got some really cool, incredibly rare stuff there. One thing that I got there once was the New Earth Creeps demo CD, which of course has an unreleased and rare Boots Riley track on it because Boots Riley's cousin is in New Earth Creeps. Well, anyways, I got this hardcore. Well, it's a CDR, but it's a demo. I don't know the name of the band, but if you put it in, the song just comes up as Don't Stop. And so I'm going to play Don't Stop off this unlabeled hardcore CDR demo that I got in 924 Gilman. It's a pretty cool hardcore track. This is Don't Stop. And we're back. That was Don't Stop. I don't know the name of the band, but they're probably pretty cool. Listen, let's get rocking along. We're going to blast through these tonight. Punk Rock Bowling Asbury Park has announced its club shows. There's going to be three club shows, each which is pretty interesting. One which I think is really, really interesting. The Friday night club show is going to be Chuck Reagan, or two Friday night club shows. The first is Chuck Reagan, Joe Jack Tackham of Dead Milkmen, and Jared Hart of The Scandals. The other one is Conflict. And then here's an interesting pairing with Conflict. Did not see this pairing coming. Conflict and the Dwarves, as well as Stigma and Wildlife. And the Saturday show is Sick of It All, Street Dogs, and Guida, G-I-U-D-A, Guida. I think the Dwarves Conflict show is awesome. I've been dying to see Conflict for a while. Well, not dying, but eager to see Conflict for a while. They only play in the States, like, I don't know, once every 6 years or so or something like that. And, you know, as you know, Conflict is a disciple of Crass. They were heavily influenced by Crass and had some sort of their first record, I think, was out on Crass Records. I'm almost sure it was. Conflict is almost exactly halfway between Clash and Crass. The lead singer, Colin, is a big fan of both. And of course, he's one of the guys that really brought the concept of vegetarianism into punk rock. You might be able to even consider him the main guy that brought vegetarianism into punk rock. Of course, the Dwarves are punk rock legends, and I think that's a great pairing because they're both slamming punk rock bands. But the Dwarves, of course, are not a anarcho punk band. They're maybe the greatest hardcore band of all time, maybe. And if not the greatest hardcore band of all time, certainly one of the greatest punk rock bands of all time. So I think that's an incredibly inspired and fitting pairing, and I will definitely be at that show.
Yeah, all of the punk rock bowling club shows, but from like either coast that have been announced, all seem incredibly well put together, and they all seem like they're events, right? Like they're special lineups that you would not normally see touring together, that you wouldn't normally see paired. They've done incredibly well with booking that whole thing this year, in just putting together things that, you know, a lot of people are going to have to travel and go to some of these because it's not just the normal tour that's going to show up. So, yeah.
Adam, cool. Do you know Conflict? Are you a fan of Conflict? Or is that a band that you've known about but have never really looked into?
They really fall more into that category for me. I can't name a Conflict thing. I mean, I'm aware of them more reputationally, Like the vegetarianism thing that you talked about, you know, of course, they're one of those bands I just recognize from like seeing their name and their logo and stuff like that everywhere. What does one check out?
Easy enough. The very first record, Time to See Who's Who. The second one is Increase the Pressure. As Conflict progressed, they kind of became more and more of a crass copy. Like, and I don't mean that as a bad, like sometimes they got a little too close to crass and the albums are almost crass. Homages or crass tributes. That being said, Conflict is great at writing snappy punk rock tunes. With Conflict is what I, to me, is what I think Anti-Flag is the most American punk rockers, if you will. Greg, anything that...
Did you drop on us there?
No, I don't. Did someone ask me something? I have even less knowledge of Conflict than Adam does. I'd know. I just know that I'd go see the Dead Milkmen dude. That's who I'd.
Yeah, I mean, fan of them. As Adam was saying, all these pairings are fairly inspired. Like you wouldn't put Chuck Reagan with Joe Jack like off the top of your head, but they both do the singer songwriter guy thing from a different perspective. Chuck Reagan more is the Bruce Springsteen singer songwriter. Joe Jack is more of the Bob Dylan type singer songwriter. Great, interesting pairing. So looks cool. And I'll be at Punk Rock Bowl in Asbury Park, so come say hi. Another festival that maybe not quite as well organized, depending on who you ask, or not quite as inspired, if you will, This Is Hardcore. This Is Hardcore Fest every year is a huge, it is surprisingly massive event in Philadelphia. Like, you wouldn't think like a Hardcore Fest would be that big. You think it'd be kind of big? This Is Hardcore Fest is huge in Philadelphia. The music scene takes over Philadelphia for almost a full week now. They have a lot of cool sideshows usually. Some of the greatest sideshows I ever saw, it was Latex, Nightbirds, Mischief Brew, and Subhumans. Amazing show. Another one was Posers and somebody else. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Posers and Negative Approach or something. Anyway, the sideshows are great. They've also done some amazing headlining acts. Last year was Integrity, which was amazing. The year before that was Cro-Mags and Misfits. This year, the headline is quite a bit of a different spin. Before I get to the headliner, other bands that are playing is Shelter, probably the first really well-known Krishnacore band, if you will. Ramallah is playing, Pulling Teeth is doing a reunion. Madball, H2O, Code Orange, Killing Time. Oh, I'm going to mention another thing too. Terra is playing, Bloodlet. So a lot of the Wisdom in Chains, Murphy's Law, Earth Crisis, a lot of the 90s hardcore bands as opposed to the 80s hardcore bands. This is almost exclusively 90s hardcore bands and 90s influence hardcore bands. The main act, which I think caught a lot of people off guard, is Buried Alive. Adam and Greg, do you guys know Buried Alive?
No.
Yeah, most people don't. Buried Alive is Scott Vogel's band before Terror, and they only ever put out one album. And I thought it was kind of unusual that Buried Alive was the headliner, not because they're not a good band. I mean, to me, they're okay. They're fine. But I don't know if anybody was squirming for a Buried Alive reunion. I don't even know if anybody had really thought of Buried Alive in the past 10 years. I know on the Facebook page, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I get to see Buried Alive. But the question I always have is, if you're such a huge Buried Alive fan, how come I never heard anybody talking about this band for the past 10 years? So the question is, This is hardcore. Like, have they run out of bands to reunite? Have they run out of headliners? Or is this a tactical strike that they're like, well, we're going to do something totally unexpected. And by totally unexpected, something nobody was even thinking about. And we'll talk about 25 to Life in a minute, too. I don't know if any guys have got any opinions on this. The point being, I was a little underwhelmed by this. I'm probably not going to go.
Yeah, I have really no idea what they were thinking with that.
Well, I imagine...
I know like three of these bands, and I don't like any of them. I think it has to do with what you were saying. Like, if you're going to get... I mean, John, you know, you and I argue about aggression versus melody or whatever we always like to get into every time I'm on. But if I was going to go to a hardcore show, it would be stuff that's more in the 80s vein. You know, I love Minor Threat. I love Bad Brains, that kind of stuff. But the H2O...
Yeah, at least have like one or two biggies. They got Murphy's Law, but other than Murphy's Law, they got like nobody from the classic era here. This is all like third and fourth generation bands, you know?
Yeah.
Madball, I guess.
There's an incredibly, incredibly dedicated scene that is into like this stripe of hardcore. So, I mean, I wish none of them any ill will, but I'm probably on the same end of you guys here where I'm, you know, none of this excites me, you know, in any particular way. And it's, I mean, as far as the Buried Alive thing, you know, this is hardcore has been going on for how many years now?
Oh, probably like almost 10.
Right. So they've, if they're pulling bands together from this specific subgenre of a subgenre of a subgenre of hardcore, they've probably mined that pretty deep. So, you know, you start to go, you know, okay, what can we pull out this year that's going to be, you know, something special and something different and something that's still in the sort of narrow vein that we've, you know, set out for this, but is something else. And, you know, that's where I think something like a Buried Alive reunion, I guess, comes in for it.
But is that going to have the draw? You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't have to sell tickets for them, though. It's not really my problem. That I have a really hard time saying. Whenever it comes to hardcore like this, I always imagine that there's some message board that is out there somewhere on the internet that probably looks like a message board that was like from like 2001. It's like running some software that's, you know, incredibly old at this point, and that has just a ton of diehards that only speak to each other in code that I will never be able to penetrate. I mean, people have had that joke. They've had that opinion, I guess, about like the Bridge Nine boards for a long time, but I'm thinking like three levels deeper than that, like the dark web version of the Bridge Nine boards. Somewhere out there, there are people that, you know, are just like incredibly into like Ramallah, and that's all they talk about. And I don't know what those people are into. So maybe they're all totally into Buried Alive. I don't know.
I guess what caught me off guard is like every band on this lineup is hardcore, and that like that's their genre. That's all they do is hardcore.
Whereas, well, I mean, and H2O.
Well, hey, all right, fair enough. But whereas in days past, this is Hardcore Fest actually used to have a couple of bands that weren't strictly within that genre, kind of to spice it up. I remember they had Gwar and Tragedy at This Is Hardcore 2013. The year before last year, they had Misfits, which isn't, actually it wasn't even that good, but who knew? But, you know, I mean, it was something that wasn't strictly hardcore. I do find it somewhat interesting that it's strictly hardcore here, you know. So we'll see. An interesting thing that
it is called This Is Hardcore.
I know, but I mean, variety is the spice of life. You know what I mean? Like how many chugga jigga wuggas can you handle? The answer is a lot.
Well, you know what is the spice of my life is crying children, which is happening right now. So you guys can talk amongst yourselves for a second. Okay. I'll be back.
All right, fair enough. Greg, listen to this story.
Okay.
So 25 to Life is playing. Do you know 25 to Life?
No, other than people making jokes in the comment section. No, not really.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like 25 to Life is this band that they're the textbook definition of cliche hardcore. Mm. And the main guy is this guy called Rick to Life, and people make fun of this guy all the time because he does like really weird stuff, like he book shows constantly, and like I don't even know if there's like a performance piece or whatever, but they booked a show in the middle of a sports bar in Delaware for some reason, like 6 months ahead of time. Hmm. And then like all these people bought tickets. And I think about 85% of people that bought tickets were buying tickets ironically. You know what I mean? Like just to laugh at the guy. Yeah. So the day beforehand, they're like, they canceled the show. They're like, our drummer has brain cancer. We can't come. What? And I don't know if it was like a performance piece or what, you know what I mean? But like everyone knew it was going to be canceled, and it was. And like this guy, Rick to Life, his face is literally covered in tattoos, and people like make fun of him and stuff. And I don't know, but I think he might have some mental health issues. I could be wrong. Mm. Right. I think he might have mental health issues.
I gotta look at a picture.
The point
this man,
is
yeah.
this.
I just see people talking about him.
Yeah, Google while I'm talking about him. So anyway, 25 to Life is playing. This is Hardcore Fest. But the rumor is, and I couldn't I saw people posting about this, but I couldn't confirm this, is the rumor is that Stickman is singing, not 25 to Life. Do you know who Stickman is, Greg?
I know who Slenderman is. No, I don't know who Stickman is.
Stickman is this other hardcore guy that was in some bands that are like even less well known than 25 to Life, but he and Rick to Life hate each other. Like they hate, like Stickman put out this hip hop diss track where he uses, like he calls him the N word, and neither of them are black, which I thought was really weird. That's like, that's really weird, isn't it?
Oh yeah. That's pretty horrible.
But like he's using it, like not in like you're an N word. He's like, He's rapping. It's not a good rap. You should look it up. It's hilarious. But like he's rapping like as if he thinks he's black, and he thinks Rick to life is black. Like, you know, in hip hop,
just like call. Instead of saying like bro or something like that.
Right. Right. But that's like really weird, you know?
Yeah.
That's weird. Right. Call it to like, just Google like Stickman 25 to life diss or something. Anyways, the weird thing is that Rick to life is not singing. Stickman is singing. And that's why I wonder, like, is 25 to life like some ingenious performance art that they've waited 30 years for it to pay off?
Man, talk about a long con.
There's so much drama in hardcore. It's like middle school. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're all juicing. They're all.
Is Adam back?
Adam is back.
Adam, do you have any comment on that? Or
no, I mean, I heard a bit of it. I'm sitting here. My son is in my arms, drinking a bottle and looking at me, and he has no opinion on it either.
He doesn't know Rick to life.
Let's talk.
We haven't got to that part of the education yet.
Let's talk about a more fundamental band, the 25 to life, Black Flag, or rather Black Flag's fifth singer, Mike Vallely, is putting out a new EP. It's called the New Arms EP. It's out April 7. And of course, Mike Vallely was the fifth singer, the fifth singer of Black Flag. And he famously fired Ron Reyes on stage. And the only reason Greg or Adam, he was also in some, he was in Mike V and the Rats and another band called like Mother something else. I'd never even heard of this band. Apparently people know about this band.
I mean, he was also an incredibly influential hot shit skateboarder.
Was he though? Yeah. Or was he just famous for like beating people up on?
No, he was one of my favorite. He totally was. He was one of my favorite skaters in the early 90s.
I'm sending out shots on this. I'm sending out a lot of shots on this podcast. But if you go to Mike Vallely's Twitter, here's what he says on his Twitter. He says stuff like, have heroes, be heroes. The mind, the body, and the spirit reject all forms of testosterone poisoning. The antidote is compassion. He says, I believe in love. He says, the point is to travel well. He says, being a warrior has nothing to do with displays of machoism. It is a matter of sensitivity and of self-reliance. The courage to stand alone. So he's got all these words of wisdom, all these, here's how you should live your life, a life of nonviolence and virtue. You know, meanwhile, he spent all the Black Flag tour dissing on Keith Morris and those guys, and then dissing on Ron Reyes, and then kicked Ron Reyes out of the band on stage and tried to steal my $10. So the point being is, I think the guy's a hypocrite, and I think this is the kind of guy who just says stuff because he thinks it sounds cool. You know what I mean? And I will propose this. And Adam Adam and Greg, you can respond to this. Never listen to anybody that acts as if they've got it all figured out, or anybody that acts as if they understand how the world works, or anybody that acts as if they understand the route to happiness, because there is no clear route to happiness. And anybody that appears to have it all figured out are really just kind of burying their own deep, ugly self and are trying to cloak that in words that make themselves feel better. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I mean, everyone's got their own, you know, formula for happiness. I mean, there are some general.
Yeah, but I'm saying,
I suppose, but yeah it, but it he, seems he, like kind of like, give me all your money and I'll send you my videotapes or whatever on how to be happy.
It seems all like I'm saying, he's saying, compassion is great. Compassion is, well, then how come you were an asshole to Ron Reyes even after you kicked him out of the band? You know what I mean?
He's always seemed totally aggro. I mean, I think it was one of the things that made him such a great skateboarder is that he just didn't fucking care about getting hurt, like hurting people and getting hurt. Like, he didn't really care about either of those things. And, you know, skateboard videos always have those little in-between moments where they're being like, oh, they're all silly, or they're like spray painting something, or they're running from the cops. And he always seemed like kind of a douchebag, but his skating was really incredible. And I think kind of this like no fear, this like testosterone driven kind of thing is what made him do some of these really great tricks. But it also seems to have made him into a bigger and bigger asshole over the years.
Adam White.
I mean, all right, I'm going to come at this in two ways. Well, on the one hand, weird, vague platitudes with life advice wrapped up in them are sort of the bane of my existence.
Yes, precisely.
And I imagine everyone else, like, I don't know if you run in the same circles that I do, but
We run in the same circles. We run in the same circles.
I tend to look at Facebook sometimes, and like a third of the people who I've come to know over, you know, the past X years of my life have stopped talking about anything and just post vague life advice platitudes, and it doesn't make me want to ignore anyone more. So yeah, I'm not a fan of that. That said, I don't want to get on this hating on Mike Vallely
train. I do. He dissed my boy Keith. He dissed my boy Keith. You dissed my boy Keith. I diss you.
I know you're. I get your beef, and I certainly, you know, were there to be like a boxing match, would be on Team Keith here. But you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to destroy this guy's whole thing. He can go do what he wants. So you know what, John, I'm just going to say, I don't know, like, I'll wish him all the love in the world here. Like, he can go and
you wish him, you know, compassion, because that's the path of a true warrior.
Yeah, exactly. The if I know anything, John, it's warriorness and true warriorness. I don't know. Like, I have no problem with him. Like, I have no axe to grind with Mike Vallely. Like, I don't want to, I feel that, like, to make him the figurehead of everyone's problems with the past several years of Black Flag drama is probably not the source of the problem.
I'm saying he doesn't get a free pass. He's a grown man. He's a grown man. He made his...
I'm not giving him a free pass. I'm just saying that, like, if I was some, you know, cool skateboarder guy that's been in some bands and Greg Ginn asked me to be in Black Flag, I would probably say yes.
If Greg Ginn called me up and says... Sean, I want you to sing for Black Flag, I'll be like, great, I'll do it, Greg. And he says, but I want you to fire Ron Reyes on stage, and I want you to diss Keith Moore. So I'd be like, sorry, Greg, can't do it. I'm a man of virtue. Compassion. That's the that's the path of the true warrior. Compassion. Somebody play a song.
All right. John, your song earlier was interesting. This one, I hope, is interesting. So I've been, of course, going down this road of trying to find as many, like, scuzzy garagey acts as I can, and this I think is right within that vein. So let's go. I forget what your song was called earlier, but you know, shit, I don't even know what this is. It's great. Just check it out. It's great.
Damn, man, that was real good. That was real good. Listen, boys, this podcast has been kind of a nonstop John rant. We've got two more John stories here, but if you guys want to talk about something else, we can talk about something else.
Oh, John, I mean, you've been so mad about everything. I feel like we need to cheer you up. We need to make you happy. So here, I'm gonna go and do. I'll do a little Adam story just to take some of the rage out of your.
I mean,
sales to deflate cage. Your rage balloon.
Rage cage.
Yeah. Anyways, Ottawa explosion. We talk about it all the time on here, in that it is the secret place where I go to find bands that I want to listen to, or the new bands to check out as I go look at who's played this thing in the past. They've announced the first round for 2017. The actual explosion fest is in, what is it, 76 days from now? It goes from June 14th to 18th in Ottawa, Ontario, of course. On this first list of bands that was put out, let's just see here if I can find a concise little list, because there's a whole ton of them. Every year they announce that around like four different rounds of bands. So this first one was released. And what I love about this is that I went and looked at this list and I'm like, I know one of these bands, maybe two, and everyone else I have no idea about. And I had this little tinge of, oh, maybe there's nothing on here that interests me too much. But then I think back to last year when, you know, I didn't go, but I was able to find like 30 bands that were incredibly cool just by sitting there and like clicking on link after link on the Explosion website. So I'm sort of in it from that standpoint right now. So like you know, I'm down with not knowing most of these bands, because I'm sure that, you know, seeing them live would be great. The only two bands on here that really jumped out to me, two or three down here that I knew, was the Bougie Boys out of Halifax, who we've talked about, or the Boogie Boys out of Halifax. We played them on the podcast not too long ago. They were like a super fast, weird sort of like Devo by way of, say, the Spits and the New Bomb Turks kind of thing. Century Palm, who we played on the show before, which were a post-punky kind of act out of Toronto. And those are like the two on here that are jumping out on me that I know. A lot of the other bands on here, not too sure about. There's like Bonnie Doon out of Ottawa, Cell out of Montreal is a hardcore band, Creepwave out of Ottawa. Crosswires is another band out of that we played on the show before. Greg, you liked their song that we played not too long ago.
Yes.
Band out of Halifax. Yeah, so they're playing it. But yeah, like Future Girls out of Halifax. And then just all these bands that I've never heard, but I'm sure if I check them out would be cool. Like I'm just like picking at random. There's a band out of Calgary called Leather Jacuzzi. I have no idea who that is. They're probably awesome. You know, stuff like that. So anyways, there's a full list. I'm not going to read them all here because it's not necessarily going to help anyone, but there's a list. There's a bunch of bands are bringing in from New Zealand this year. Most of these bands are Canadian, of course. A bunch of acts from Cleveland that they're bringing up. So anyways, go check out OttawaExplosion.com. The first round's announced. There's like a early bird pre-sale thing that's going on. I am pretty damn sure that I'm going this year, and I don't exactly know the mechanics of that trip. It's just going to be like, bye family for a week. I'm going to go live in a hostel like I'm 20. That's the plan.
Are you going to stay in a hostel?
Yeah, I think so, because hold on, my son is cranky because he's
don't leave me, Yeti.
Yeah, I like pretending that's actually John making those noises.
Yeah, that's John's rage just kind of like percolating.
I'm reverting back to my primal form.
So no, there is a hostel in Ottawa, actually right sort of like down in the area that you need to be to partake of the various explosion venues, which is an old jail. Oh. And they've made this old jail into a hostel, and it will not be the first time that I've stayed in an old jail, and I'm sort of looking forward to going and staying there. I stayed at a jail in Lucerne, Switzerland.
Woo!
And it was pretty nuts because in the basement of the jail, there was like this like super loud club that they put in. So just reverberating throughout the whole rest of the building was just like bass coming out of this club. But the rest of it was like legit jail. Like it was, you know, they didn't lock you in the rooms or anything like that, but it was, you know, dang, you were in jail cells. So me and my wife, and my one friend, we had, I guess, yeah, the three of us were in the one room there. And like the other people that were on the little tour that we were on were in various other rooms. And, you know, the doors to the rooms, they were legit. They were real jail doors. They were big and thick and had bars on them and things. And it was sort of great. So there is there's a jail hostel in Ottawa. And if I'm doing this thing solo, I have no reason to not stay there. You can get a room that is apparently like a solitary room where you have like, it's like 3x9.
Talk about white privilege where you pay to stay in a jail.
I know, it's going to be great. So, anyways.
What's the definition of a hostel? Like, what is a hostel?
Well, I mean, so like
I got to do it for students.
From an organization standpoint, yeah. Like Hosteling International like sets out a bunch of rules for these kinds of accommodations.
Wait, so it's a company?
And there's like memberships that you can join, and you know, if you're a member of the Hosteling International thing, then you get like discounts at other hostels. Generally though, it's, you know, it's non-private accommodations is what you're getting. So you may end up in
it's like a dorm room.
You can book like a dorm room. Like there's a room with like a bunch of bunks in it and like a shared bathroom or something like that. And if you're into traveling like that, there's like a whole vibe around it. Like hosteling people sort of like to, you know, hang out and meet other hosteling people go on little adventures together and stuff like that.
Some hostels are almost like hotels, and like you get your own room, right?
You can pay for more private accommodations, but they generally all have the shared stuff is sort of like the main thing.
And you have to be a student, or they just don't care.
I don't think they care.
Okay.
You have to be kind of like of that sort of, you know, hippy dippy, you know, traveler class where you're not looking to go you know, stay in a luxury hotel. You're trying to get out there and be with the people.
Yeah. Car and I like stayed at one in Rio de Janeiro. We were in Brazil in 2008, 2006. I don't even know, but it was, yeah, I don't know. We paid, we thought we had paid to reserve
and how was that?
A
room that was just for us. And it ended up being a bunch of fucking people. And it was unpleasant because people in hostels always smell bad. You know, I don't know.
Greg, what's it's definitely not the kind of place you want to go if you want to like have a whole ton of privacy. Right. But I mean, I've gone to other cities before for music things where I've gone by myself and I've like gotten an Airbnb somewhere. And it was mostly just like, you know, I'm going to come back there to sleep and then, you know, leave there first thing in the morning to go just explore the city and then eventually go to whatever music thing I'm going to. So I would kind of look at the hostel in the same way where it's like I don't need a, you know, I don't need to sit around and watch TV somewhere. Like I don't need all the hotel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Interesting. Greg, anything you want to talk about, Greg?
What's that?
Anything you want to talk about, Greg? Anything you want to bring up? Any news articles that you found interesting?
Well, I was going to give Mike V a little bit of credit and link it to Dinosaur Jr. because one of his skate segments was the first time I ever heard Dinosaur Jr. It was Freak Scene on a 1989 Santa Cruz Speed Freaks skate video. So that was pretty cool. So thanks, Mike V.
Greg, you used to watch skate videos?
Well, I started skating when I was in like first grade and probably more legit than most first graders because I had an older cousin who had like a half pipe in his backyard and all this shit and I really looked up to him. And so he started giving me skate videos or let me know which ones to get. So I still have all these VHS ones of like, you know, Tony Hawk at like 16 on the Search for Animal Chin, which is one of like the very first skate videos. I've got all these really classic 80s and all the way through the 90s. Skate videos, and then I stopped skating in the early 2000s when I got old.
We talked about this on an earlier podcast. What's the purpose of a skate video?
It's kind of like, well, it's almost like Adam is like the smarty pants always going to these conferences. I mean, whether they're about podcasting or whatever else. This is a way for the industry to see what everyone else is doing in terms of skate tricks, I suppose. I don't know. It lets people see, especially in the age before the internet. You know, you'd buy a skate video to see the rad shit that your favorite guys were doing or to find out about the new up-and-comers. Buying actual DVDs, just like buying any physical media, seems less and less crucial. Just like buying a skate video today, like, wasn't nearly as important as it was when, you know, I was in fifth grade in the, you know, the late 80s. You know, but back then, that's how you found out about what the shit was going on with the skaters. Yeah.
So Greg, you can answer this if this is a good idea or bad idea that I have for myself. So I work in this office. I was discussing whether. Oh, hold on. My kid wants milk. Here you go. All right. Do I need to start riding around the office in a purposefully purchased office skateboard? / I don't know how to skateboard.
That'll make it all the more entertaining to your coworkers. What kind of floor surface do you have in your office?
It's that kind of like industrial office carpet that has like very little give to it. I figure you would roll over it probably pretty easy. As far as me not knowing how to skateboard, it's probably good because it would give me a little bit more friction. So I'm not like zipping all over the place. I would be just, true. You know,
but when you fall, the carpet burns would be unbearable. And you'd hit your head on like the edge of a cubicle or something or a standing desk. I don't know what you guys got.
I'm just thinking I should go on to like Kijiji or something and find some kid that's selling an old skateboard for $20. And I'm just going to start riding it around the office. And that's the level of obnoxious that I'm going to become.
I think Adam should make a skate video of him in his office, like doing tricks, but like failing horribly at every trick. And meanwhile, there's like music in the background. Listen, speaking of skate videos, let's tear through our last two stories. DFL, at Punk News, we did two really cool things at Punk News this week. Even though apparently I'm going to be super emo here. Apparently I'm the only person that thought any of this was cool, apparently, but this was cool, is DFL streamed the tape show, which is the alternate edition of their album Grateful, which came out in 1997. So I was really honored to stream. This is the first time this has been made publicly available. It was a rare tape even when it was originally released. And this was a mixtape. This might be the first rock and roll mixtape to support an album. And it was cool that we got to stream this. So
it is quite cool. I have not listened to this thing yet.
I listened to it a little bit, but it was pretty interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, DFL is real cool. Like, even though they're a 90s hardcore band, they sound like an 80s hardcore band, but they don't sound like they're trying to sound like an 80s hardcore band. They just sound like an 80s hardcore band because all the guys are from 80s hardcore. They just started playing this kind of music in the 90s. They're cool. Last story, and I thought this was super cool, even though everyone in the world hated it, but I thought it was super cool. Emo John on the attack. Peter Hook. He's putting out Peter Hook of Joy Division and New Order, the Peter Hook, the bass player, who I've seen live and is awesome live. He's putting out 4 live albums. Each live album covers a full Joy Division or New Order album. Basically, it's the 2 Joy Division albums and the first 2 New Order albums. It's him and his band, The Light, playing the songs live. And live, they play them very much in a, well, not very much, but it much more in a punk style than you hear in the studio. Joy Division is famous for Martin Hannett's production, and the same with those first 2 New Order albums. Very heavy, very cold, very atmospheric. But of course, the thing with Joy Division is the band was always somewhat annoyed by their albums because live, they didn't sound like that at all. Live, they sounded like a punk band to a degree. They sounded rawer, louder, fiercer. So Peter Hook, when he plays live, he's kind of giving the finger to New Order, who kicked him out of the band. He plays his versions live, loud, and raucous, while New Order kind of does the show busy, slick, you know, same 12 songs, where Peter Hook just tears through the jams. So he's putting out 4 live albums, and we got to debut Peter Hook doing Transmission, Joy Division's Transmission, live. And I thought this was super cool because, A, we literally debuted a new take on a Joy Division track by one of the major Joy Division guys, and B, we got to debut this track, which I thought was ripping and is an interesting take on this song, and I thought it was cool, and everyone hated it, and now I hate the world.
I didn't hate it. I thought,
did everyone hate this, or did everyone hate your massive level of hyperbole that you lumped into the story?
What do you mean hyperbole? No hyperbole in this at all. What are you talking about, hyperbole?
Hold on, let's see. I'm just going to take random words.
Well, you said ripping. You called it ripping in all caps.
Yeah.
You said brought the thunder.
He did. He's the bass player.
He said he was the thunder from Not Down Under.
What do you want? Count them 4.
Well, they're opening out 4.
This article includes an above average amount of John article spice. Well, so hey, I think it brought out all of your detractors who look for the reasons why they don't like you. You give them any John article lyric, lyrical spice, and they just all start to froth.
What do people want? Peter Hook, he's putting out a new song. Here it is.
Used to complain about the articles having just like 2 sentences, and now that there's more than 2 sentences, they're picking apart every sentence.
I am by no means suggesting that you do anything but what you do. Yeah. I'm just saying that's why people yell at you.
Yeah, I don't know why people
get mad about someone being excited about something. Fuck that.
I don't know how people aren't excited about Peter Hook doing Joy Division tunes live in a punk style. How is that not thrilling? It's Joy Division. It's Peter Hook.
I personally think that it was a pretty cool take on it. For me, it's still weird Ian Curtis, obviously, he's not going to be singing it. It's weird hearing someone else sing it. But I think he does it justice by not trying to sound like Ian Curtis. You know, he does it, like you said, rougher. And when I hear the song, it always just makes me feel bad for the drummer because it's got these 16th notes on the hi-hat like the whole damn time, and it's got to be exhausting.
It's a totally cool rendition of the song, and I like Hook's whole I like the vibe that he's putting into this stuff. Like I like hearing some Joy Division stuff with this level of like aggression and rockiness. So it's cool. The song is cool, but John, that's what people I think complain about. You've got your people. You got your chorus. You know?
I'm just like I said, my snark level is at a -7 D&D, and I just don't know how people aren't excited. No, People get excited about the friggin' Flatliners, which sounds like Bush. And meanwhile, I'm like, here's Mr. Joy Division. And they're like, oh, this is stupid. I used to be, say, live and let live. But now I'm going to the counterattack. I'm taking punk back. I'm fighting. I'm attacking. So get ready, everybody. The guns are out. The war is on. The war for punk is back on. That's right.
It's all dwarves from here on out with some Melvins.
That's right.
I can't believe you just referenced Bush.
Was that what that
God.
Was? Glycerine.
Greg Pace.
All right, John. So I mean, I was going to let Greg play the final song here, but you are so angry.
I'm angry.
I think we need to give this slot to you.
And I'll let you have it.
Put something that just is the sum total of all the rage and frustration that you've expressed this week. Just like fucking blast people. Do it.
Oh, you mean like yell at people?
No, like play the song.
Oh, that
expresses your feelings.
I mean, I'd probably play some pussy shit like Fleetwood Mac or something, but you know hardcore, so I think you should go.
And don't do that. Just play something harsh.
All right. This is, listen, when I hear this music, I get just so enraged that I just want to start killing people. Like, this music, like, makes my mind just, like, rip in half. All I see is red. You know, my shirt explodes open like the Hulk. My nails grow, and I just want to run out and slash people's throats and tear it open and suck out the blood. Let's play it. No name, no band. Let's just play it. Here we go. Have we cleansed the air? Have we now returned to a state of zen?
John, I was in a weird, tired fugue state when we started this, and now I'm all worked up. I don't know why. So,
yeah, I think it depends how Adam's kid is doing, if he's in a state of zen or not. How's he doing over there?
The kid is back asleep. Yeah, he's cool. He's good, but... You know what they say, John, you can go your own way, eh?
Don't stop. Don't stop believing, you know?
I got nothing.
How are we editing this?
That's fine. You can go your own way.
Up so